The first section of a three-part podcast series features the Small Wind Certification Expert Panel Roundtable. In this first section, our industry speakers discuss the definition of small wind and some of the challenges associated with the growth and development of small wind technology. For more information, visit www.intertech.com/windpodcast.
Good afternoon and welcome, everyone. My name is Vince Reynolds, Director of Sales at Intertech here in Cortland, New York. And today we're discussing the impact that research, testing, and certification has on the small wind industry. Throughout our discussion, we'll ask questions to help us understand how the small wind industry impacts our economies, our communities, our political decisions, our environments, and more. Our expert speakers today represent a broad range of small wind industry stakeholders. Our panel includes representatives from the manufacture to the installation of small wind turbines to the people who help shape the policies that drive the industry. Joining us today, we have Alex Hagen, president of Weaver Wind Energy, David Gower, project manager at the Center for Evaluation of Clean Energy Technology, or CSET, Karup Janoyan, associate professor and executive officer, Civil and Environmental Engineering Department at Clarkson University, Mark Mayhew, project manager, New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, or commonly known as NYSERDA, Pierre Marzocca, associate professor, Department of Mechanical and Aeronautical Engineering at Clarkson University, Sherritt Chase, president, Chase Wind, and Troy Hewitt, wind energy business leader at Intertech. For more information on our expert speakers, please visit www.intertech.com/wind. And now that we know our panel of experts, let's get started. My first question this afternoon is for David Gower. And David, what is the definition of small wind?
Well, there is no one definition to small wind. In fact, there are several different definitions that are currently used. One of those definitions is based on the Electrical Code for North America. That'd be the NEC and the Canadian equivalent. And that defines small wind as anything less than 100 kilowatts. However, that is not the case for the European standards, the IEC standards, where the IEC 61400 standards are specifying that it would be less than 200 meters squared, which actually equates to about 50 to 65 kilowatt size turbine. So there are also other indications of defining different levels of wind. NREL has conducted some research and has defined the small wind as under 100 kilowatt, and they've looked at the mid-size wind being between 100 kilowatt and a megawatt, and large obviously being above. So it is still something in discussion. I'm sure everybody here at the table has their own opinion on what that might be, and I think it is one of the things that would be helpful to define further.
Yes, Mark.
Yeah, and if you talk to our neighbors to the north, Kanwea defines small wind as anything under 300 kW. So there's even another different definition. Now, when NYSERDA rolls out our new program, we're also going to use the 100 kW as the measure of what will be small wind. However, we're going to have a slight twist where we're going to, instead of being the manufacturer's nameplate rating, it'll be the AWIA rated capacity is what we're going to be looking at for that definition.
Thank you. I'll tell you one question that I had, and this is for the panel. What is the definition of on-grid versus off-grid wind turbines? Troy.
So as the name kind of indicates, the off-grid turbines are typically used to charge a battery bank as opposed to the on-grid, which would feed power to the electric utility. Small wind turbines that are on-grid, they're either an induction type of machine that can connect directly to the grid, or they're feeding through an inverter, which is utility interactive and can feed power back to the grid and is specifically certified to do so. The off-grid applications, the machine will hook up to a battery bank through a charge controller that controls the charge level of the battery bank, and then there will be an inverter to power local loads, or they can use it just as DC power to power local loads.
Should there be a definition distinction between sizes? For instance, say smaller rotor size turbines and units are unique and able to operate in lower wind speeds? And I'll throw that out to the panel. Alex?
Yeah, I'm not sure that, in my opinion, that that's necessarily required. In our opinion at Weaver Wind Energy, turbines that operate in lower wind speeds, they don't generate a whole lot of power because there isn't much energy in the wind to be captured at lower wind speeds. We feel like the industry should really be focused on higher wind speeds, because that's really where the available energy is, and at the lower wind speeds, it's sort of like asking if a solar panel can generate energy at 6 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's not really that important because there isn't that much energy there to capture.
Thank you. Would anyone else on the panel care to offer their definition of small wind? From a practical point of view, not necessarily a definition as we've covered the distinction between U.S., European, and Canadian. Share it.
I would say a criteria for small wind would be having construction equipment which is relatively accessible to your average construction company without specialized equipment being required to import from great distances at great expense.
Thank you. Yes, Pierre.
Yes, just I would like to add that maybe we should put it also in the context of what is a community wind or a mid-size wind and the very large winds, because as you go and classify a group of turbines within a certain class, you needed to see how it fit with the other classes. And I think most of the talk nowadays is on the large winds because of the large energy production and the cost of energy, but clearly there is a benefit in going on small wind in communities where the class of wind is low, and there is a lot of opportunity there. So if we classify community wind as above 200 or 300 kilowatts, then everything below that amount may be classified as small wind. So.
Thank you. Yes, David.
I was also going to just mention, too, on the NREL site, they also discuss the concept of distributed wind, and the idea there being it could be small wind or the mid-size wind, but the idea there is putting wind in a way that can actually help the current transmissions, transmission of power generation. So that, in some sense, maybe these definitions and standards are not going to just be on the technology, but on the use of that technology, potentially.
Before I leave this topic, is there anyone else who would like to comment?
I would expand on the definition of off-grid wind machines. There are dedicated uses for wind machines which are non-electrical, for instance, water heating or water pumping. They can be quite large for those applications. There'd be designated applications which are other than for electrical production.
Thank you, Sherritt. What are some of the challenges regarding small wind turbine installation? You touched upon zoning just a second ago, but what are some of the other challenges?
In regards to the challenges to small wind installations, there is unfortunately not enough information available to the public on the performance challenges of small wind energy systems. Though there are many thousands of installations around the country, and there have been several unfortunate failures, the studies and reports of those episodes are typically not placed into the public forum. The necessary result is an abundance of negative reaction and opposition because good information has not been shared to redirect the opposition with abundant clarity and transparent truth of good science and empirical evidence. There have been challenges with small wind systems, but fortunately these events are rare and little harm has been created. The opposition, using this absence of true knowledge, usually takes the table in the public forum and has forced many local zoning code changes with unchecked preventive measures such as excessive setbacks, impractically short towers, and unachievable noise standards.
David, this question is for you. Is the reaction from the local communities a challenge at all?
Well, there definitely is a lot of publicity when projects come into town, just like any other power project. But the interesting thing is the often incredible statements that are made about wind. There's actually a newspaper article about a wind turbine that was proposed in this area here in Cortland County, and people were afraid that it was going to shake the ground with the vibrations it had. And I believe, and I forget who the congressperson or senator was, but there was a statement by somebody in the government that quite seriously was saying, you know, he was concerned that it would be slowing down the rotation of the earth by having those turbines. So I think when you have statements that are that outlandish, you end up with a public that, you know, perks up their ear about it. And then they're open and willing to believe a lot of other things. And so I think that gives the opponents of wind energy ammunition and sometimes credibility where it's often not deserved.
Yes, I had a follow-up anecdotal story to share about that, you know, adding on to what David said about the amount of misinformation that's out in the community. I was speaking with a person who found out I was involved with the wind industry, and this person said to me, you know how utility-scale turbines, how they're all lined up in a line? And I said, yeah. And this person said, does the first one in the line make the wind for all the other ones? And I tried really hard not to laugh, but it just gives you an idea of how much misinformation and misunderstanding there is about, let alone basic physics, but you know, just how wind turbines work and how they can be used to generate energy.
Thank you. What about the safety of birds? Is bird safety compromised at all by small wind turbines?
They are not known to be a common risk from small wind turbines. The greatest risk may be to those clever ones which choose to nest within the tower structure. I have no data from any small wind turbine manufacturer or test lab or field experience which documents any bird or bat strikes by small wind turbines.
I'm sorry, I don't have a specific reference for this, but what I'd heard at a American Wind Energy Association conference was that your average house cat or your average large picture window reportedly kills about 10 to 50 times as many birds as your average small wind turbine.
100 times,
yeah, depending on who you ask. The danger to local wildlife is really pretty minuscule.
Is noise pollution an issue that needs to be addressed?
Among the environmental issues, we have noise, which is the relative comparison of the ambient against that caused by the operation of a turbine. Ambient noise at the extreme low limits of even 30 decibels also coincides with no wind activity. Thus, there is no operation of the turbine and nothing to compare. When noise is perceived from the turbine, it will be only during the operation of the rotor, which may be from any of several sources. The industry's rather pat answer to the question about noise is that there's no more than from a domestic refrigerator. Nonetheless, even a properly operating refrigerator can create a nuisance if running in an extremely quiet environment, and the rhythmic nature of a wind turbine's noise and directions in which that noise can be projected around the compass of operation makes it unique compared to a refrigerator. The standardized approach with measurement techniques, though precise, sometimes do not characterize the specific sensitivities of the audience. The most common source of noise is the aerodynamics of the blades, especially when passing the impeded air around the tower. Disruptions by damage to the surface of the rotor blades will cause much greater noise, but which damage is generally repairable. Though the aerodynamic noise source of noise is little different than the quality of the noise from the wind passing through the trees, it is rhythmic at the rate of the blades passing, and for some people, a distraction. For some turbines, this source of noise is especially apparent either directly in front of or behind the rotor, even at the distance of several hundred feet. The more problematic and avoidable noises are known to be that of the gearbox and the intermittent sources such as yaw drive motors. The occasional and unnecessary noises resulting from failed parts or vibrations from loose components are mechanical and can be adjusted. These are, of course, fixable with proper attention. Direct drive generators without gearboxes are inherently more quiet than the comparable gearbox-driven unit. familiarization with and real-world experience of actual small wind projects by the presumed opposition is usually the best mitigation. Invite your neighbors to a field trip. Have a picnic. Information and understanding are always best, and most wind turbine installers will not be threatened by this challenge. The location of neighboring wind turbines may be available from your installation company to witness during various wind conditions.
What restrictions exist now that make it more difficult to install these turbines and get the most value from them?
Then there's social issues, the primary one being property value. Decrease has not been demonstrated in the vicinity of any small wind energy projects. American Wind Energy Association has identified no studies to the contrary. These findings have been confirmed by the Renewable Energy Policy Project, the Eco Northwest study, and others around the country. Increases in property values, on the other hand, have been observed in some areas where wind turbines, both large and small, have been encouraged. The reason is obvious, that when you can reduce the cost of living by producing your own energy, the value of your property will increase. Oil wells, gas wells, wind turbines, they're all the same. Nonetheless, initial negative reaction in some communities requires additional public outreach to demonstrate the benign nature of small wind projects.
We talked earlier, but there were roughly a little over 100 small wind manufacturers in the United States today. And some of them are literally just barely above micro wind manufacturers in terms of size. What support is available for these manufacturers who are literally pioneering the small wind industry in this country? And I don't mean just in terms of economic support, but in support in dealing with the various communities. I think it's unreasonable to expect that every small wind manufacturer is going to be able to go to every city and town and deal with local zoning and regulatory issues. This is addressed to Alex as someone from the small wind industry manufacturing community.
I would say that there's quite a few resources. In my experience, first and foremost, the American Wind Energy Association, going to those conferences and networking with the other people in the industry. I've found everyone that I've met there to be very open and engaging and supportive. I think the general sense is that the potential for this market is large enough that if we all work together and learn from each other, the net benefit will be much greater for all of us. So there's a tremendous network that can be leveraged there, as well as, there is support from the government in various government grants that are available through NYSERDA and even other federal organizations. I know that David's organization, in association with Clarkson, is putting together some support services to help small manufacturers. Specifically, in my case, and with a previous company, the certification testing that we did with Intertech was hugely supported by an NREL grant that helped pay for a large portion of the rather expensive certification project. So, it's a young industry, and there's a lot of challenges, and it's definitely a major challenge to develop and manufacture and market a small wind turbine. But there are resources out there available that can help some of the smaller folks if you're willing to go out and look for them.
Yes, David.
Yeah, to follow up on what Alex was saying, it is proposed that CSET would use a portion of the funds that we're receiving from NYSERDA to develop a program that would offset some of the costs, for the certification testing, particularly because it is a very expensive prospect for a small company like that. And I think in addition to that, in our collaboration with Clarkson, RIT, SUNY Binghamton, and Alfred State College, and other universities and colleges in New York, we want to really provide some access to all of the expertise and experience of the folks like Pierre and Carup, who are very knowledgeable at the design phase, and support that with also making sure that these small companies are aware of, again, what they're going to be confronting when they have to pass the standards test. So they don't design the perfect product that's the solution for all the world and find out that there's no standard for that, and they're going to have to wait 5 years for a standard to develop. And that could potentially happen. So we want to make sure that we're able to help in that respect as well.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Small Wind Certification Podcast. Do you have a question about the topics you heard here or want to further engage the speakers? Join our LinkedIn group titled Small Wind Certification, where we are continuing the podcast discussion. You can also learn more about the speakers on the web at www.intertech.com/windpodcast.